Hi, I'm Jerry Hanauer, and welcome to this edition of Candidates Corner. And our guest today is Lee Nyquist. And Lee is a Democratic candidate for
Great to see you, Jerry.
State Senate, District 9, Clues Bedford. He's from our neighboring town of New Boston. Lee, welcome to Candidates Corner.
Thank you, and it's great to be here. And I did want to, pay some tribute to our backstage people here, Bill Jennings and Colleen Richardson, who do such a good job keeping us on time and on schedule.
Absolutely. And they keep democracy alive here in Bedford, keeping the voters informed. So let's tell them a little bit about Lee Nyquist. Tell us a little bit about you personally, your family. I know you were married in Bedford, as a matter of fact, in the Presbyterian Church uptown. You live in New Boston. You've got some older kids and some younger kids. Tell us about your family.
Yeah, well, I'll do my best. I married my wife, Leslie Nixon, attorney Leslie Nixon, over at the Bedford Presbyterian Church way back on September 3rd of 1983. And we've had a long relationship with both Bedford and the town of New Boston since then. We moved into New Boston in 1989. Our children had already started being born. I've had five children. Christina's the oldest. Carla, Cliffy, who we lost, and now our nine-year-old twins, Lincoln and Linnea, became the town moderator of New Boston way back in 1992. Member of the community church, where I've been a church elder and actually sing in the choir from time to time when I have some chance, and just been incredibly involved in the community of New Boston and also in Bedford, particularly in youth sports, Jerry. I'm a product of the public schools. I think that's why public education has always been so important to me. I became the first member of my family, the Nyquist family, who were Swedish immigrants back in the early part of the last century, to go directly on to a four-year college when I attended Harvard. So my feelings for public education are just so strong.
I think you were at Melrose High School, is that?
That's right. Yeah.
And Melrose High School traditionally had a seat where the top student at Melrose High School was invited to attend Harvard College, and that's how you ended up at Harvard College?
Well, it seemed that way at the time, and I've always joked, and there may be some truth to it, that it was a down year at Melrose High School, so I had the chance to go on to Harvard College.
Oh, that's the explanation. Okay. And then after Harvard, I think you went to American University Law School, and you had a law career since then. You were, I think you were a clerk for a New Hampshire Supreme Court justice.
And right. Let me try to summarize that really quickly. I went to American University Law School and was on the Law Review, graduated, and was privileged to have the opportunity that not many people have to come back to New Hampshire and be a law clerk, as you said, for Supreme Court Justice Maurice Bois. Went on directly after that to the Manchester law firm of Devine, Millamet, Stahl and Branch, which is still one of the leading firms in New Hampshire. Several wonderful folks from Bedford are there now and have been over the years, and then had the honor of starting my own law firm with Kevin Devine way back in 1985, Devine and Nyquist, in which we had 25 years of great success before I moved on to Shaheen and Gordon when they opened a Manchester office just a few years ago.
And aside from your professional career, you're heavily involved with civic involvement. You've integral part of your community in New Boston and your church. And I know for the state, you're a member of the Unemployment Advisory Board.
Talk
a little about this service.
Actually, I'm the chair of the Unemployment Compensation Advisory Board and have been since Governor Lynch appointed me way back in 2005 when he first became governor. It is an advisory council to the Department of Employment Security. And what we do there is try to bring business and labor together, particularly when it comes to proposed legislation, so that business won't have a bill in the legislature that's a business bill and labor won't have one that's a labor bill, but that the two groups will have come together in our council and formulated a bill that's good for both of them and the state of New Hampshire, and then that bill gets proposed to the state legislature. We also oversee the functioning of the department. It's an exciting opportunity, and I've been doing that now for over 11 years. Together with that, Governor Hassan, shortly after she became governor, appointed me to be a member of the State Workforce Investment Board, which is chaired by Bedford's own Dick Antignost and has been for 15 years. And what we do there is related to the work we do over at the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council, but is more specifically tailored to bring business, labor, and education and government together so that the educators are establishing curricula that will create a workforce for the businesses, and they're not doing it in a vacuum. So the businesses, the advanced manufacturers of New Hampshire, the automotive industry has input and tells the educators, both at the high school level and in community colleges and the university system, what it is they need for their workforce. And that is a particularly important thing here in New Hampshire now, where we have a deficit of skilled workforce. 400 auto technician jobs, Jerry, are available tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock across the state of New Hampshire. And advanced manufacturing has well over 1,000 openings. And these are jobs that our kids can get. Not only will they have great earnings and benefits, but it'll push our economy ahead because the employers need these people because we don't have them now.
It's interesting to see how your civic work has meshed so closely with the type of initiatives that are needed in order to grow our economy and grow businesses here in New Hampshire. And I know you're also a member of civic groups, as I am. You're a Rotarian.
Yes, I think you have your Rotarian pin on there.
I do.
Yeah, my pin today is the American flag, but I've got my Rotarian flag, which is ready to go for the next Rotary meeting. I've been a member of the Manchester Rotary since 1993. It's obviously a great opportunity to serve. And again, apropos of critical issues that we have now, our Rotary Club for several years now has had a very successful antique car show in downtown Manchester, in which the streets of downtown Manchester are closed off for 700 or 800 antique cars from across New England. And we raise well over $50,000 by doing that. And just this past year, actually this year, we donated $10,000 of that money to the Manchester school system because one of the wonderful middle school principals and a couple of the teachers over there wanted to put together an integrated curricula that would concentrate on evidence-based education for the students for substance misuse. So, for example, the curricula would have math, science, English, and social studies, but in every single one of those courses, some tie-in to the substance misuse crisis, the opioid crisis that we have now would be integrated with it, and students would learn, and it would be a prevention device. This is about to get off the ground. There wasn't going to be public funding for it, but the Rotary put the money off, up, and I'm pleased to have been a small part of the fundraising activities for that. And this is the kind of thing that we need to do both formally in our public schools and otherwise in more informal settings.
You know, I every year I go to the to the auto show, and they close down Elm Street, and it's a wonderful take. I didn't quite realize, how the profits are used. I just kind of enjoy the sunny day and the beautiful old cars.
But, right. Well, all the $50,000 is used for benefiting the youth of Greater Manchester and New Hampshire. But this was a specific opportunity that we took cognizance of because of the drastic crisis that we have and losing over 400 New Hampshire folks to this crisis every year for the past couple of years.
Yeah. You know what it's like to have a tragedy in your family, to have lost a son. Talk about Cliff a little bit and how even today, and it was a tragedy about 12 years ago, and how Cliff's memory still informs your life and the decision to make, particularly in the political arena.
Yes, well, thank you for asking, Jerry. And, of course, speaking about our wonderful son Cliff, who died in a tragic drowning accident when he was a 15-year-old sophomore, passionate, energetic individual, remains very bittersweet. The sweet part of it overrides the bitter part. And, yes, he does inform my life. What Leslie and I learned during the several years of intense grief that we had is that we must nurture the memory of our lost children the same way that we nurture physically the lives of the children we have who are living. And we've done that with Cliffy's memory by funding a scholarship at Goffstown High School, which is the regional high school for the town of New Boston, in which we honor with $1,000 scholarships that we donate each year, a boy and a girl who, together with the counselors and teachers at Goffstown High, think exemplify many of Cliff's wonderful traits. And at scholarship night every year in June, I go back and make that presentation, and it ties Cliff's memory into the present. He was a 21st century guy, really committed to diversity, and he was a facilitator for kids who weren't part of the in crowd. He would take special empathy for them and introduce them to the social things at the school and be there to mentor them. I was already using him as an example the way that most young boys would use their dads. And so, yes, it does inform my thoughts. I very much want to be a fierce advocate for New Hampshire families. That's why I'm doing this. His loss and the meaning of my own family to me, I think, inspires me to be, hopefully, when I win this on November 8th, for the next couple of years, a fierce advocate for all New Hampshire families.
And it's interesting that you tell me this about a really wonderful trait of Cliff, that he seemed to be interested in bringing people together, people who weren't necessarily involved in their high school experience because they were kind of on the outside, and Cliff was a collaborator. And now you say that you would like to be a collaborative senator for the state of New Hampshire. So let's talk about that a little bit. I know it's also true because so many I know all the Republicans in town. I really do. And I won't mention them by name, but a couple of the most prominent Republicans in town. Well, one's Jim Scanlon, who I know is publicly endorsing you, and there are others as well who tell me that they're particularly interested in your candidacy and your winning, even though they were Republicans. It's clear that you're a bipartisan type of person. Tell me about how you would work collaboratively as a senator.
Yes, well, I will. And certainly I know because of the results that we have won hundreds of Republican votes here in the town of Bedford, for which I'm grateful. I'm very much a moderate person, both of personality and of political belief. So I'm motivated to bring people together. You know, Jerry, when we all go to work, whether we're a lawyer or a tradesperson, we go to work with the obligation and the expectation that we're going to bring people together and achieve something at the end of the day. And if we don't, of course, we're not going to last long in our jobs. That's what we do. So I certainly have my principles, and I'll be bringing them to the table in Concord. But I'm going to go in there to do bipartisan work, by reaching across the aisle, as you mentioned, collaboration. Perhaps we can even have some companionship across the aisle so that the work of the state of New Hampshire, the interests of the state of New Hampshire, will be promoted and will actually be accomplishing great things for the state. It won't be a Republican accomplishment. It won't be a Democratic accomplishment. It'll be an accomplishment of all of the state senators in collaboration, of course, with the House, the governor, and the executive council. That's what we need to bring. We can't have folks who go up there with a figurative placard that states an ideology and says, I am right and you are wrong. Hold up that the whole day and leave at night and bring it back the next day. That's not what I'm about. I'm about listening to people, thinking about what they're saying, and not only listening, but actually incorporating the ideas that I find to be helpful and useful, mm-hmm. not ones that I have come to the job with. People over the years, whether it be in the legal business or town moderator, have said on occasion, Lee, we think you're a very creative guy, and we appreciate that. I've thought about that a lot, and I really don't think that I'm necessarily creative, but I do think that I'm a good listener and a person who, when he hears a good idea, adopts it and incorporates it and brings it to the floor, and that's what I want to do.
Now that we know your approach with this collaborative approach, let's talk about some of the initiatives that you would bring to the Senate as far as policy is concerned. I know you talk about the physical infrastructure of the state. You talk about the intellectual infrastructure of the state. That means business and it means developing the resources, intellectual and infrastructure that we need for businesses. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Absolutely. I'm a believer that government has a handful of essential roles that they must perform. Educating our children, our grandchildren, and establishing them for the future, for them and for our economy, is at the top of that list of essential goals. That is fundamental for our economy. The other thing that's fundamental for our economy is the physical infrastructure, our roads, our bridges. And quite frankly, now we have the opportunity to connect Bedford and Manchester to the rest of the Northeast Corridor with rail and bring us into the 21st century with light rail. These are things that government should be helping out with. And state government needs to be stepping up, because we all know when it comes to public education that the burden now falls overwhelmingly and inappropriately on the property taxpayers of the towns, particularly towns like Bedford, New Boston, where I come from. The state's contribution to public education, the donations down to the towns, has decreased enormously over the last generation at the rate of about 1% every year. And we need to restore back to 2008 levels the state's contributions to the towns, reverse the downshifting that quite frankly, our incumbent state senator, Andy Sanborn, is the leader of downshifting of costs, both for education and for the physical infrastructure. We need to have the state step up for helping with building of schools. For 8 years, no money, no state money has come to the towns. Almost no state money is allocated to fix local roads and bridges. And we know here in the town of Bedford, I believe it was a $30 million bond a couple of years ago that people had to step up for. And the state should have been funding a part of that, but wasn't. It affects property values. It affects the real lives of people who literally cannot afford to pay their property tax and their mortgages and keep their homes here in the town of Bedford. Senator Sanborn refuses to have his fingerprints on any revenue raising by the state, whether it be for a very modest gasoline tax to help with the roads and bridges, or whether it be with any other form of revenue certainly not a broad-based tax, because I am vigorously opposed to a sales or an income tax, but we need to be able to raise revenue at the state level so that it's not all foisted on the property tax folks.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about women's health issues, if we could. I know it seems to constantly be a bugaboo of some people in the opposite party that they won't fund women's health. They won't fund contraception, family planning, and
cancer screening.
Yeah.
All kinds of things that our wives and our moms and daughters need to have that maintain their health. It's very, very unfortunate. And again, it seems to be a group of folks who have an imported ideology, not one that New Hampshire people think about. I am a firm supporter of a woman's right to choose her own health care in consultation with her family and her doctor. And I respect the choices that each and every woman makes. No choice is better than the other, but we need to respect women at this point, the year 2016, and understand that they have the intellectual capacity and the moral capacity to make the judgment that is best for them. And I will do everything I can to defeat any legislation which is designed to have government interference with that fundamental choice. And I will certainly be voting to fund Planned Parenthood, who provides these services so that they're not just rights in the abstract, but actually rights that women can achieve by actually getting treated in our system.
Let's talk about some legislation that's come across the current or the just passed session of the New Hampshire legislature. There was a bill, House Bill 629, and what Health Bill 629 did, and it was sponsored, I think, by 11 Republicans and a single Democrat. I mean, it was a really, we talk about a collaborative approach. I mean, here was a really wedge issue, divisive bill. But paradoxically, the Republicans, who seem to consider themselves champions of individual liberties, they would, through this bill, be compromising the ability of individual people and women in particular to make choices regarding their health, and to have to and would place a burdensome reporting requirement on health care providers. That's every hospital in the state to report on a monthly basis to the state about the amount of the number of women who seek pregnancy terminations. Can you tell me what do you think about legislation like this, and how is it that in this day and age legislation which is so restrictive and so invasive of individual people's privacy and is also would increase the state's bureaucracy in looking into people's lives, how is it that such legislation thrives? Maybe you can't answer that question, but you can speak to it anyway.
Well, again, it's a very serious issue, and it's a very thinly disguised effort to thwart woman's legal and moral right to make the choices about her own body and her own future. This particular bill, 629, is imported from outside the borders again of the state of New Hampshire. It's a model bill designed to thwart women's rights, and it comes into New Hampshire and tries to require. Fortunately, it was defeated, but it was very close. It was 12-12, actually. It was designed to make it so a woman would have great obstacles to be able to have an abortion and not be able to make that moral choice for herself by requiring the medical providers to tell everything there is about the procedure that she had, everything there is about her sexual history, about what contraception she was using, and how old she is. Can you imagine the chilling effect that this has not only on an individual to know that this information is going to be transferred to the Department of Health and Human Services, but also to a medical provider who otherwise would be providing this service? And on the very same day, Jerry, that this bad bill was acted on in the state Senate and lost on a 12-12 tie vote, also in the state Senate was a bill that would have eliminated our very modest buffer zone law, which provides a very small zone of protection for women who are going for health services at Planned Parenthood or any other medical institution in the state of New Hampshire. So if a woman were going there for cancer screening, for example, she would be subject to intimidation with no statutory protections. This bill was acted on the very same day as House Bill 629. Again, it is imported from outside the state of New Hampshire. We respect our women. We respect their intelligence. We respect their morality. We respect their judgment. And we respect their ability to go without intimidation to get the kind of medical services that they need.
Let's quickly talk about another onerous a procedure that was favored by your opponent, Andy Sanborn, and it was conversion therapy. The American Psychiatric Association, the American Medical Association, has determined this to be a bogus practice. It treats sexual preference, specifically perhaps homosexuality, as being a disease. And there have been a practice among which is now thoroughly discredited, try to convert people from homosexuality or whatever their sexual preference is to another sexual preference. Suicides have resulted from it. But yet Andy Sanborn voted against a bill which would outlaw conversion therapy practice in New Hampshire.
Right. Well, both the House and the Senate had acted to make it illegal for a so-called psychologist to do this conversion therapy, which does interfere with the sexual identity development of youth and also has been known to raise suicide rate. American Psychiatric Association, American Psychological Association, American Medical Association are all downright against it. We can't have this kind of thing. Sanborn was able to kill it in conference committee by running out the clock. We're going to change that this time around. We're going to pass conversion, the banning of conversion therapy, because we're going to bring together the well-meaning members of the House and the Senate, with the signature of the governor, we'll get conversion therapy outlawed in the state of New Hampshire.
Perfect. Well, that's what it means, I guess, to be a collaborative senator rather than a divisive senator. So thanks so much for joining us here today on Candidates Corner. And let me remind our voters to go to the polls.
Great to be here, Jerry.
On November 8th. Lee Nyquist, thanks for coming in.
Good to be with you.